to Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. I'm Kim Russo. I'm the director of AGLCA. Today, we're going to cover what remains a hot topic and has been so for about the last year or so, and that is the current status of the insurance market as it pertains to looper boats. So my guest today is Ken Marks. He's been with us before, and he'll be joining us once again. But before we bring in Ken, I want to take a moment, as always, to recognize and thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes & Associates, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, and Waterway Guide Media. As always, we encourage our listeners to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. And with that business out of the way, I want to welcome Ken Marks back to the podcast. Ken is with Marks Marine Insurance, which is an AGLCA sponsor. And Ken, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for asking. It's great to be here.
Yeah, and you and I have been working on scheduling this for a few weeks now, but just coming off of the winter rendezvous, this was certainly one of the hot topics. So we're thankful to have you here to talk about it. First of all, you know, introduce yourself to those who maybe haven't seen you on the podcast before. Tell us a little bit about your background, because you've been in boating for quite a long time, so you're bringing a lot of experience to the table.
Ironically, yesterday I found my first survey from the first boat I've ever owned, 1989. Been boating pretty much my entire life. My father got me into it. We originally started on a small boat, sailboat, Chesapeake Bay, which turned into larger boats and time in the Bahamas, pretty much up and down the East Coast. Then personally, I got really into offshore fishing, spent tons and tons of hours, 70, 80, 100 miles offshore, chasing a big fish. Got tired of that and then got back into the cruising world. So pretty much I'm an avid cruiser. Normally would be down in Stuart for the winter. Life had other plans this winter, so I'm sitting in my office up in right outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah, and you've been helping loopers and other boaters, of course, with their insurance needs for how long now? I know it's been quite some time, so you're a real expert.
1987, I got into insurance. 1989, I got very active in marine. I actually started with Go Fast, the cigarette-type market. Mm-hmm. And then in the mid-90s, I got pulled in with Sports Fish with Ocean Yachts, which was built here in New Jersey. And then pretty much been doing it ever since. 1996, I launched InsureTheBoat.com. So that's how long I've been on the internet for.
Yeah, that's great. So last year at this time, you and I had this kind of chat, and you were somewhat the bearer of bad news for many at that time, because the insurance market, the marine insurance industry in particular, has had some really seismic shifts over the last few years, some related to COVID, but and the popularity of boating during COVID, but that's really not all that's going on here. So tell us about what is it out there that's making it hard for recreational boaters to get the insurance they need?
Well, first of all, we're down to basically five real marine insurance companies now. We lost another company in October. We're seeing companies going, there should be coming in this quarter, but they're going to be drastically different than what us traditional boaters know for deductibles wise. COVID has been, for 21, has been a huge, huge, huge issue. It has affected, you know, everything from policy issuance, policy availability, company availability, as to getting the quotes turned around, you know, claims availability to getting boats fixed. The cost of claims have gone up astronomical because A, materials, we know the supply chain issues, and B, the cost of labor. So, you know, there's just a multiple of issues that happened in 21. None of us could have forecast that, you know, brought us to this point that has created a very tough, difficult market, to say the least.
So last year at this time, Ken, we talked about and you just mentioned that there's fewer insurers in the marketplace. And at that time, I kind of interpreted that as, well, shouldn't those few marine insurers left, wouldn't that be great for them? Because they could be writing lots more policies. There's a need out there. People want insurance. But, you know, after talking about it more and learning that there's kind of a finite amount of dollar value that each insurance company can write insurance for. So is that correct? Is that accurate? And what does that mean then for the average boater? You know, are the, is it just that the insurance companies are being choosier because they can fill their full book of business with things they consider lower risk? You know, kind of explain that process to us.
The insurance companies, some of the insurance companies, you know, the bigger companies can maintain, insure the whole risk. Other companies, they say, for example, we're doing a $500,000 boat. The other companies go out, they will, we're insuring your boat for $500,000. They hold the first $100,000. They buy reinsurance for the next $200,000 or $400,000, depending on their reinsurance treaties. So these companies slotted from the mother company, be say Farmers or whoever the mother company is, they're giving a slot of say $100 million of new business to write, just using that. Mm-hmm. Once they get to that $100 million, then they have to renegotiate the reinsurance treaties. And that's where, you know, some of the book slows down. Other companies, they just don't have the capacity or underwriting to bring on that much, you know, new marine. It's just, they just don't have the, you know, the know-how to do it right now.
Right.
I'm so, losing that question.
that's a great answer. And I think that what that means for most loopers who are out there searching for a boat and are then going to need to insure it is that those companies are being choosier, you know, looking for ways perhaps to reduce the risk. So I know there are some guidelines that a lot of the companies are putting into place that it are hard for wannabe loopers to really meet. So tell us a little bit about kind of the age of the boat that's in the sweet spot right now for insurance. The size of the boat, I know, has become an important thing, and the previous experience of the owner. So what are, and I know every insurer is different, but, you know, what can a looper who's out there looking for a boat expect to have in terms of limitations of what they'll be able to get insurance for? Are there any numbers you can give us?
Okay, for the broad person who's never had insurance, Progressive will always do just liability. Mm-hmm. So they could have never owned a boat, bought a boat, and go out and buy a $35,000 or $40,000 boat for cash and get just liability with a company like Progressive. They'll take pretty much anybody without even experience. Now, from the Carolinas down, that only goes to 35 feet for just liability. Up from Carolinas up is 50 feet just liability. Uh-huh. So that's one company. Most of the companies, really their sweet spots are 2000 and newer. But with that said, we don't have a problem going back to 1980. You know, as long as you have experience. Now, that's the biggest thing. Historically, up until the last 5 years, boaters would start on their, you know, father's 15 or 17 foot fishing boat, and then they would move up with their father or brother into a 25, and then do the 10 foot jump. Historically, that was the track. Uh-huh. Now, with today's society, we're a more you know, need it now type society, and technology's made it easier to run a lot of these boats. People jumping into 35, 45 foot boats. Companies aren't really looking for those people if they have no previous experience with, you know, a dad or brother or family, you know, legacy, or obviously owning their personal boat. So we really want to see somebody that has a minimum of 3, and some of the companies are asking a minimum of 5 years of experience now. And with that being said, they want that experience to be within 10 feet of what you're currently buying. So if you're looking for a 35 foot boat, you need to be, you know, involved with a 25 foot boat, whether you're a partner, silent partner, whatever it was, you want to have some, you know, legacy experience on a boat.
Right.
So that, you know, the easiest underwriting is to say 10 feet. Jump from your previous boat.
Yeah. And that's, you know, certainly a change from what we've seen in the past. And with the average looper boat being 40 feet in size, that's part of what's creating a challenge for people, because it's pretty typical. If they've got experience, it's typically been on a weekend runabout, you know, something in the 20 feet range. So jumping up to 40 is a bit more of an insurance challenge than it was a few years ago. is there, you know, we're hearing these guidelines, and you know, I saw several loopers at our rendezvous that just ended who kind of listened to some of these numbers and went, I don't check those boxes. You know, we want to get a 40-foot boat. We haven't owned a boat before. So I don't have the experience they're looking for. Does that mean there is no option for them, or are there some companies that, you know, they're saying that everything's got a price? Is it possible to get insurance that it just might be more costly? Does it narrow the number of insurers available to you, or is it just completely off the table at this point?
Well, question, Kim, and honestly, Lloyd's of London, which tried to get into being a regular marine insurer, is doing what they used to do, is taking high risk people again. So there are some Lloyd's programs that will insure you, but it's, you know, you're going to pay to play. And as a fellow boater, I hate seeing those kind of costs passed on, because there's a lot of additional costs with those policies, you know, higher deductibles and whatnot. Now, again, circling back, companies like Progressive, they will allow somebody that hasn't had a boat before to buy something in the, you know, 30 to 40 foot range, as long as it's not a, you know, South Carolina or North Carolina boat south. If the boat's more, you know, Virginia, Chesapeake Bay, we're going to be fine. They will do boats within 15 years new, which is difficult because we all know not a lot of boats were built. So there are options. It's not my favorite option. Progressive is an auto company trying to do boats. They're not a true yacht policy, but there are options. And with that said, people before, you know, they, and I'm probably jumping ahead of where we're going with the conversation, but if you're going to go look for a 40-foot boat, before you even call the yacht broker, if you have your mindset on a pretty main ship, and that's a great boat, and if that's what you want, call a marine insurance agent and say, this is my resume, my boating experience. My father had a 25-foot Chris Craft or whatever it is. Can we get me qualified on this? I have, you know, here's my resume as to charter experience. Can I get qualified? Well, yeah, I have one or two companies that if you have a lot of saltwater time, sea time, they're going to qualify you. But, you know, there's more and more of these companies are getting very, very difficult as to giving such broad navigation, especially the first year. I mean, if you're going to buy that main ship and just want to stay to your local waters, Kentucky, the Great Lakes, Chesapeake Bay, we can get people in. If they're looking to get in that boat and do the loop the first year, it's going to be very difficult with lack of experience. Mm-hmm.
So one option, Ken, that I've heard mentioned is, you know, to kind of get an interim boat that maybe isn't quite the size you were hoping for the Great Loop, but a step up, and, you know, hold on to that a few years, get that experience, and then take that next leap up to what might be your ideal looping boat. Is that a strategy that you're seeing work for some?
Yes. Right. Telling everybody, go out and get your time, get your sea legs on a 26 foot, spend 2 or 3 years there. And then it's a lot easier launch platform for me to get you from a 26 into a 40. It's a lot easier than from nothing to a 40. You know, some of my companies, if I show the experience and you have the 3 years, 2-3 years on a 26, they'll make allowances. They just don't want the zero experience.
So is part of this issue being driven by, you know, the significant number of claims that have been put in the past several years? You know, where does, because I think a lot of people think of people in our age bracket as loopers, as low insurance risk, but we are putting a lot of hours on boats, and, you know, not all insurance claims are coming from something that was a mistake or somebody's fault. but that said, there are lots of claims in the last few years. So how has that impacted the marketplace?
With my particular loop book last year, we did pretty good. The year before was a really unique year. We all know there were a lot of bucket listers, and they have a different mentality. It's got to be understood with marine insurance. There is a inherited risk of being a boater. You know, a long-term boater like me knows that there's costs involved. You're going to hit a dock. You're going to hit something in the water. You've got to be prepared to self-insure. Whether that mindset, I recommend to everybody, whether your deductible is $1,000 or $2,000, have a mindset of self-insuring for $5,000. You know, even though your policy deductible is not $5,000, go forward with, if I hit something with my props, I'm going to eat the first $5,000. The reason I say that is the insurance companies, we had one looper in particular, he treated it like an auto policy. He had a $1,000 deductible, and with six claims, he turned in three, within 6 weeks, I'm sorry, he turned in three claims, all within an $1,800 price tag. So he had three claims with a $1,000 deductible, $1,800 claim. Each time he got $800. Insurance company, and this is a, you know, $1,800 claim. I think it was a $60,000 boat. And he turned in three claims in 6 weeks. When insurance companies see people not willing to invest, you know, in self-insuring themselves, it's the worst thing we can do. That, you know, I can't get the guy insured now. He's with one of these auto companies that are, you know, you got coverage, but it's not my favorite companies to, you know, sell.
Yeah. That's great information. And I do want to ask a little bit more about kind of what's the difference you mentioned with, you know, kind of a company that's traditionally known for homeowners or an auto policy and turning to them for boat insurance, because I know that there are some things that you need to look out for there. So let's play a quick message from one of our sponsors, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about, you know, the difference between a true yacht policy and a policy you might be getting from a company that you have coverage for your other items for. So we'll be back in a moment.
Welcome to Beneteau by Invitation. This new concept was born from a very simple idea. Offer your family an opportunity to meet ours in a fun, exclusive, and safe environment that mirrors the way our boats feel. Jump aboard our latest models, go for a private sea trial, and let us talk together about our common passion for the sea. There's a Beneteau by Invitation event coming soon to a harbor near you, so come experience what everyone is talking about. Contact your local dealer, get your boarding pass, and we will see you on the water.
We're back on Great Loop Radio. My guest today is Ken Marks. He is with Marks Marine Insurance and is also known as InsureTheBoat.com. And Ken is filling us in on some of the challenges for newer boaters who are interested in doing the loop to get the insurance that they would want for their loop vessel right now. So Ken, we did kind of touch on the idea that one place people are turning to if they can't get the insurance through a traditional marine insurance company is you know, State Farm or Nationwide or somebody who's insuring perhaps their cars and their home. There are some potential pitfalls there. So what should people look out for? And is that really a viable alternative if they can't get a true yacht policy?
It's an option. It's not my favorite option, but it's an option that it gets you on the water and it will get you through into the marinas. The problem with the homeowners policies, you know, the homeowners auto companies doing boat policies, a lot of them, they sneak in the fact that the policies are actually actual cash value policy, which is really concerning. And, you know, give a little education. There's two yacht policies out there. There's the agreed value policy, meaning if we agree to insure your vessel for $100,000 and the boat disappears, you know, burns the waterline, whatever, we agree to pay you $100,000 at the time of loss. Then there's the actual cash value policy, which will insure the vessel up to $100,000, but they'll go by market, which is always the, you know, the lower value of what's selling out there. And their partial losses are, you know, always on ACV also. The problem also with those homeowners companies, a lot of them will not send out to the Bahamas. A lot of them don't cover if you run across a reef, you know, coral reef and do damage, which a lot of people forget about. They're responsible for the damage to the natural, you know, living reefs. And the third thing is, which you'll have to discuss with your lender if you're taking a boat loan, a lot of those companies are not being honored by marine lenders now because of the ACV, you know, the actual cash value endorsement these policies have. And the worst experience I've had with these companies is a lot of them do not have a marine division for claims. They're using an RV division or the motorcycle division, and the claims response and the claims understanding and the claim, it has been nightmarish with some of our experiences with, you know, the traditional auto companies doing boats. So know, you get what you pay for with those companies. Just, you know, buyer beware.
Yeah. So along with kind of the more stringent requirements on the previous experience, have you also seen, you know, kind of an across the board premium increase?
Yeah, that's, I mean, honestly, and I think I mentioned this the last time we spoke, when I was doing insurance in 2003, a $200,000 boat was more expensive to insure than it was all through 2009 to 2017. The rates in 2009, 2017 were probably 50% less than they were in 2003. 2003 rates are probably equivalent to what we're paying now. Uh-huh. And the reason was 2009 to 2017, we had 28 to 30 insurance companies. Now we're down to 5 or 7 insurance companies. Uh-huh. Supply and demand, the companies can, you know, and also, and I've mentioned this before, technology, the cost of technology, the newer boats especially are all fly-by-wire, meaning what used to be controlled by cables are now done by computer chips and, you know, electric pulses to the engines, your electronics, your radar, your GPSs, everything is read by electric pulses, where before, you know, a compass, if you had a lightning strike, a compass was still a compass. Now these claims have gotten astronomical with electronics and computers on engines, you know, those things have changed the insurance rates drastically. We weren't prepared for it. The industry was not prepared for all the electronic components on boats, pods, sea keepers, even the generators, you know, have gotten very controlled by computers, and the sensory, the surges that we have seen coming from some of the marinas as the marinas age, which we have a lot of marinas aging out, you know, up and down the Eastern Seaboard, just the loan on the Eastern Seaboard. And we're starting to see more surge claims because of the sensitivity of the electronics on boats. And these older marinas, you know, have old pedestals, haven't been serviced in 15, 20 years. And the voltage coming in on those boats, the boats were, they're too sensitive. Yeah. So they're just some of the factors.
Yeah. And it really seems, you know, from somebody outside the insurance industry like me, it just seems like everything collided at once, you know, between the cost, the claims, number of claims and the amount of claims going up, and then COVID hitting and the number of insurance companies going down. It just seems like it's kind of the perfect storm to make marine insurance a challenge, which is troublesome is maybe the word for some of our newer members. And we had a lot of people at the Winter Rendezvous looking for boats. And I think some were really discouraged by a lot of this insurance news that they were hearing. So I just want to encourage them to reach out to an expert like Ken, like some of the other AGLCA sponsors. You know, don't go on the idea that you won't get insured. Go to an expert who can, you know, reach out to several different companies, offer you suggestions on the best way to proceed. But Ken, you also mentioned the idea, and it's not really a pre-approval process, but you mentioned bringing in an insurance expert on the front end of the boat search. And that's different than how it used to work. But tell us a little bit more about, you know, kind of how you recommend the person in the market for a boat go about starting the process and when they bring an insurance expert in.
Well, a good question, Kim. The fact is, most of us know within a certain barometer which boat we're going to be buying, whether it's a main ship, a Silverton, we already have that. Come to the table to your insurance agent and say, I'm looking at a 2006 38 Sea Ray, whatever it is, you know, based on your you know what your cap is, your purchase powering is of 150, say, and get a quote based on that and see if you can get underwritten and quoted on that. Now, with that said, this has been my nightmares on Thursdays and Friday nights, Kim. It's some of these companies out there, these online companies, are quoting. You think you're coverage. You think you're able to buy the coverage. You go into buying the coverage, and the last, on the 23rd hour, they say you're not insurable. And it's one of the people, you know, we all depended on, we all, you know, used to really have faith on to lead the way through brain insurance, and they have really left a lot of people high and dry the 23rd hour before settlement. And, you know, on a Thursday night and Friday night, we have been pulling out, you know, binding people in emergency situations. So make sure, you know, if you're set, you've found the boat, especially, you've got your financing in place and you're going to settle the 15th, get your binder done the 10th to make sure there's no hiccups, because you'd be surprised how many hiccups will come when you try to get that binder issued from more so an online insurance company. And a lot of these agents that don't specialize in marine insurance, I see it, especially the home and auto guys, they'll go to bind and realize once they go, because they don't know the background underwriting, once they go to bind, they don't realize that, oh, the insurance company won't take this person because they don't have the experience on the boat, or they're all of a sudden there's an insurance score rating issue. So.
And that's really important information, and especially to get the insurance part, you know, kind of nailed down and in line on the front end. And I've spoken to several members in the last months who have found a boat, have it under contract, went through survey, ready to close, and find out that they can't get insurance because they didn't realize how the marine market insurance market is working, particularly during this, you know, day and time. It's not like auto insurance where you can just call and get coverage and that's that. So we really are trying to get the word out to members that this issue is happening so that they can make sure that they incorporate that into part of the boat search and how to proceed from there. So Ken, when we spoke last year at this time, you mentioned, you know, it's a lot of supply and demand. The market is cyclical. And eventually, I think you used the pendulum analogy, and that at some point that pendulum will swing back. Doesn't seem to be any sign of that happening yet. And we know that some of these market forces in place could be years in the making, but you've been doing this for a while. What's your gut instinct when the situation might change and it might become easier again for people buying a boat to get the insurance that they're hoping to have?
I would say we're going to start leveling off in within the next 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to have another 2 years of, you know, rates raising, and then we're going to hit a plateau for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to the experience too, Kim.
Yeah.
A big misconception with yachting experience or boating experience, people think that they had a boat in 1990, they got away from it. They think it's like auto insurance. Auto insurance, you have to have consistent insurance without a lapse of coverage. Boat insurance is not like that. Mm-hmm. If you haven't been on a boat since 1990 and you had a boat, your dad and you had a boat, or you and your brother had a boat, 1990, and it was a 28-foot boat and you got away from it, that's the last boat you had and you had experience on. You don't have to. People will come to me and say, oh, they'll do our online quoting at the website, and they forget to put this. And I said, you've never had, you know, the boat before? They said, yeah, I had a boat from 1990 and 96, but I haven't had a boat since 96. That counts. We don't need, right now, currently, the insurance companies are not looking for no lapse of boat ownership. The only question is how many years of experience, not consistent experience. So it's important that people, when they're getting quotes, filling out the online quotes, talking to agents, they remember those boats that they had as a kid that they had use of. I mean, if you had use of your grandfather's boat down at the beach or shore, as they say in New Jersey, that accounts, because you were covered on your grandfather's policy if they even had insurance back in the day. But you were more than likely on the family policy, the family legacy. You were covered under your father's, your grandfather's, your brother's policy to be an operator on that boat. So make sure you count that experience on your, you know, application.
Yeah, definitely spend some time thinking about that too, because a lot of us don't, you know, really recall the times we spent, but had some great times on the water as kids that can be counted as part of that. So certainly spend some time trying to recall all that. Ken, last question, because I get this a lot. A few years ago, insurers, they would often, even if you didn't have experience, would require a captain to be with you, a licensed captain, for a certain amount of time. Sometimes they would ask that captain, you know, sign off on a set of skills that they can vouch that you have mastered. is that even an option anymore for somebody with less experience to have a captain for a period of time, or is that just not even something they're doing anymore?
I speak solely for me. I can't speak for other agents. I have one or two companies that have a little more authority with that. If you're going from a 25-foot boat to a 45-foot boat, I can do a 30-hour sign-off or the captain sign-off. It's pretty diligent. Now, understand what that means is during that 30 hours, the captain has to be on board observing. Uh-huh. They have to make sure, and there's a lot of questions in this question cap, you know, that they're going to sign off to. But they have to make sure that you're able to dock. You know, anybody can go up and down in a straight line. It's the closed facilities of a marina. Uh-huh. Close quarters. You can dock in wind, current, tide. Hey, even me, I jumped on my father's 36-foot Alvin troller, and I'm cocky. I got a 58-foot motor yacht. I can put it anywhere. Uh-huh. I jumped on my father's 36-foot Alvin, single troller, single screw. We put the boat back in the water. And I'm coming out of the travel lift, and the wind blows me against the dock. I ripped off the dinghy davit. $1,800 later, I'm paying my dad for the dinghy davit. We all experience it. That's why we boat. It's a different challenge every time we go out. But you know, it's we can sign off on it, but there's very, very few is allowing it now. So yeah, it's an option. But you're going to have experience on a 25 or something, you know, to qualify into it.
Yeah. So, Ken, this has been enlightening. It's great information. As I said, we really want our members and others who are in the market for a boat to realize the markets, you know, the market that we're at play in here. So this has been great shedding some light. And I think really kind of the biggest takeaway for everyone is to engage a marine insurance expert. You know, before you give up hope, there may be some options. There may be some experience you've had in the past that you didn't even think about. But reach out to one of the AGLCA insurance sponsors, which includes Ken at ken@insuretheboat.com. I've got that right, didn't I?
Yep.
Okay.
Excellent.
But reach out to someone who can really kind of explain to you what's taking place and find the best option for you. And it may not be the ideal option, but there may be something available. So Ken Marks, thanks again for sharing all the details with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Kim. Yeah. Have a great one.
You too. And to our listeners, thanks for joining us once again. We'll be back next week with another episode of Great Loop Radio. Until then, safe cruising.